Yo people, Anna David with After Party Pod. After Party Pod is a part of After Party Magazine, a website determined to change the face and get rid of the stigma around addiction and recovery. Now, After Party is a part of RehabReviews.com, the world's largest resource for treatment centers across the globe. You can go there to see if your rehab stay could be free. Go to rehabreviews.com/benefits-check. What else can you do there, you may ask? You can get a RecoverGirl t-shirt. Go to rehabreviews.com/recovergirlshirt. Sorry, guys. Anyway, you'd know all of this if you were signed up for our newsletter. What are you doing? Go sign up. rehabreviews.com/newsletter-sign-up. Now here's the show.
Welcome to the after party. It's time to change. You're just getting started. You can teach an old dog new ways, and not just on Saturday.
Hey, you guys, it's Anna David with the After Party Pod. How are you? It's good to talk to you. How are you? Are things good? If you have never listened to this podcast before, where the hell have you been? /welcome. We talk about addiction and recovery and healthy relationships. And this particular episode, we're not an addict, this guest. So we didn't get into recovery, and yet we did. This is kind of one of my favorites. You never know. You never know what's going to end up becoming this incredible conversation. Not that every conversation on this podcast is not incredible. So what do I want to tell you? I feel like all my intros often have to do lately with like, I'm just kind of tired and it's Friday or something. It is Friday. I'm not tired per se. I eat a lot of pasta for lunch, which is not something I do because I live in Los Angeles where, you know, gluten is the enemy. So as somebody I dated briefly used to say, I'm not gluten intolerant, I'm gluten intolerant tolerant, to describe me. So yeah, so I just don't tend to do that. It's like heavy and all of that, but I did it. It was free food. I work in this office where there's a catering company that will occasionally host these lunches where it's free and all you have to do is fill out a survey afterwards. So it's not a bad deal at all. At all. So what else? I have a bit of a headache. I don't know if you ever have this, but you have like the hint of a headache and you go, no, is that a headache or is it not a headache? And if you, you know, and then I start obsessing over, is this a headache? And that can give you a headache. I started doing this, I don't know. I used to have chronic, horrible headaches. My 16th year I had of life, I had a headache the entire year. And parents took me to all these doctors. And I ended up at a neurologist, with a neurologist who plugged me, as I recall, plugged me into like a biofeedback machine. By plug me into, I mean suction cups were placed on my forehead and those went to a machine and they measured your stress level. And mine, like the needle went over 10 to 11, as they say. And so then they started doing biofeedback on me and then giving me prescription meds. And it was my first experience with opiates. And I remember Darvocet was what they gave me. It's now long gone. That's how intense it was. And I remember driving safe to school and thinking, God, I feel good. And I thought, oh, I must just feel good because I've been in pain for so long and it's gone. But I was like, this is a little different than that. I didn't know I was getting high. But anyway, so I ended up going to this naturopath recently. And she's diagnosed me with all those things that you hear everybody had, Epstein-Barr and asymptomatic for everything. But she said the headaches were a symptom. So I started taking about 10,000 supplements every day and the headaches went away. And then So I had full on faith with her. And then I stopped having the faith. I would get these blood tests and she would go, oh my God, it's gone. Then, oh my God, it's back. And then she's in Seattle. So I'm not even able to see her and just terribly difficult to get a hold of. Doesn't seem to read my emails accurately if I'm having symptoms. And I know everybody is like, go stop this, go to another doctor. And I gave all the blood tests to my regular doctor and he's like, no, it's fine what you're doing. It's just supplements really. And anyway, so now I'm getting like hints of headaches again and I'm going, oh my God, this naturopath, none of it works. And who knows? We don't really know. It's the human body's weird. We just don't know what's going on, no matter how much these doctors and naturopaths act like they do. Anyway, how'd you like that? That journey into my health. I'm going to tell you about today's guest. I love this guy. His name is David/Dave. Let's start again. His name is Dave Nadelberg. Apologies, I just got a text. Dave Nadelberg is the creator of Mortified, which is an extremely popular stage show that has been around for 13 years and is all over the world, started in LA. And it has become, sorry, just got an email, very popular. It has become two books, a documentary, now available on Netflix, and a TV show, which was on the Sundance Channel, which I watched obsessively. And according to Dave, nobody else did, but he's just being modest. So anyway, I used to watch that TV show. I had met him briefly, you know, say 6 or 7 years ago. And I used to watch that TV show. And then he showed up at this storytelling show that I used to do called True Tales of Lust and Love. Episodes still available on iTunes, by the way. And I was super nervous. I was like, oh my God, Dave Nadelberg is here. Ah, I froze a little bit. But then we became friends. I worked through that. And now I we hang out. He comes to parties at my house. I really, really, really enjoy this guy. And I perceive him to be just so, you know, kind of not always like, not necessarily the life of the party, but just like super charming guy. Girls always come away with crushes on him. And so I just thought, well, he's created Mortified. It's become this very big thing. It's where people read the sort of journal entries and letters they wrote when they were teenagers or even younger. And it has a lot to do with relationships. And so I thought, this will be interesting. We'll get him talking about what makes for a healthy relationship. And we ended up getting into so much more. Interestingly, though, we went in not thinking we'd be talking about recovery. We got more into talking about recovery than ever. And it just came out in a very organic, unexpected way for me, possibly for you too. We'll see. So anyway, this is Dave Nadelberg.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh my God. I think my copy has like blood stains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal. I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the, as right. I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere.
I'm very lucky because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
I do not.
Emotionally cut off to people.
Here, but use your mic when you're going to say anything interesting.
All right, I won't say anything interesting. My name is David.
What I was saying is that I've known you now for, 3 or 4 years?
Something-ish like that.
And it's not that I perceive you as closed off or shut down in any way.
We're starting really friendly.
But you did say that your energy would perk when we started to get going. So I'm just infusing you with some.
Am I there yet?
I perceive you as always there. Back to what I perceive you as, which is apparently what I just will only talk about. You know, so not at all a closed book or whatever. But I feel like you're careful about what you reveal, as opposed to everyone else.
Reveal about
I know.
Myself?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
But I think the one of the reasons I have that idea about you is that I asked you to do True Tales, and anyone I asked always was like, absolutely, oh my God, yes. And, you know, and they'd figure out later what they wanted to... No. We've been going. That's my backup.
We've been recording. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All this magic has been caught so far.
Okay, good.
On
good.
Tape. But when I asked you, you very thoughtfully said, you know, I don't know. Let me think about it. Let me think if I have a story, which was unlike what anyone else I ever asked said.
Oh, right. Yeah, you did have kind of a surprised reaction to that. And I just recently wrote something that would have been great for your show.
Really?
Like 2 months ago or 3 months ago, and I started performing it.
Where?
I did it at the Sunday Night Sex Show, and then I did it at Taboo Tales.
Yeah, that was mm-hmm. recent.
Yeah, and because I had, because your show, Love and Lust, was like, all right, you got to have a story. It's got to be probably at least 70% funny.
Yeah.
And weirdly, most of the things, well, I don't know weirdly, but like most of the things that I write when as a writer are, well, I used to be sort of a comedy writer. Like I moved to Los Angeles to like write TV and film, like wacky animation and puppet kind of stuff like that. Right. I wanted to be like Pixar guy. But yeah, my creative gravitational force went elsewhere. And but the things that I tend to write, and especially like right now, I've been writing a book for several years, and I would say they're like 15% funny or 20% funny and serious and, you know, heartfelt and earnest, you know, things that words that people don't like. Because they associate it with Hallmark Channel.
I happen to hate the word earnest, and I happen to use that word when I tell people to when they're writing for me on the site. We don't do earnest.
Yeah.
But at
it might not be the right word. But it's I like yeah. you know what the right word is? Human.
Yeah.
I'm really into things that I like exploring the human condition, which means a full rounded experience. So like it will be funny, but it'll also be serious. It will also be
sad
and philosophical. Like I like giving people all the feels.
Yeah. No, I think that, well, the truth is I have not read your writing, which is kind of, you know, goes back to my original point that I don't know that much about your, you know, like, you know, secret personal life. I guess secret means I shouldn't, but because what you do has a lot to do with people being very revealing.
And confessional, sure.
Yeah. I think that's why it's interesting to me.
That's right. So right before we started recording, yes. you had asked me, you said you saw me as, you didn't know, you didn't, you said, is there anything I need to avoid? I said, no, it's a fairly open book. I'll talk about whatever. And you were like, oh, that surprises me.
Yeah.
And that surprised me that it surprised you.
Right.
And we're just in this weird shame spiral of surprise.
This is so meta. It's like
super.
Like, but I'm surprised that you're surprised by my surprise. I'm kidding.
Right.
I'm kidding.
We're just doing a thing.
We're doing a bit. You know, it's not earnest. But so so I okay. But back. Let's you know. Let's go chronological in terms of how. You know, how we met. How this perception started. I went to a Mortified show. You know what it was? What was that Jewish magazine that was really funny? That my
Heeb.
I went to a Heeb storytelling show. It was the first storytelling show.
I performed in a Heeb show. Did you see me?
I think you performed that night. Was that the night that Emma Forrest took her dress off?
Yes.
Okay. So that's what happened. And then...
And Colin
Farrell was there. Yeah.
Yes.
As was Kate Beckinsale. It's not that I'm obsessed with celebrities or anything, but I do remember she looked so amazing.
I just remember my girlfriend at the time being like, Colin Farrell's here, and he said hello to me in the bathroom. Or, wait a minute. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. More than hello? What were they doing in the same bathroom?
I think I meant on the line for the bathroom. But
I will tell you, not to get too off track, that I went to Yoga Works on... Hollywood and Vine. I used to go there for a while, and I walk into this class, and Colin Farrell is there. And the coolest friendliest guy. And I would say we had a quote unquote relationship in that hour that was, I mean, he was so cool. We were partners on this thing. He was with his sister was there, and she would be like, no, 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 you partner with her. No worries. He got me my mat when it was like the end of the thing. And I thought, this is the beginning of, you know. Okay, I'm almost done.
Wait, you're not done? I'm sorry. Well, I was just rude and I interrupted you?
But so, and at the end, I'm so glad we're getting so into your stories. At the end, he was like, so what classes do you go to? And it was the moment if we were going to launch into anything where he would have said, well, you know, how can I reach you? And he did not.
Where he would have said what? Oh, how can I reach you again?
Yeah, and it was just very much, oh, cool, you go to that class. And then I went back to that class.
To see him.
Of course. And somebody there was like, you brought Colin Farrell to the last class, right? And I was like, so proud. I go, no, 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 I just met him then. And she goes, really?
That's kind of like when you go to another city and you hope that they think you're local.
Yes, a little bit.
A little bit that.
When someone asks you directions, like, and you're Austin.
You brought Colin Farrell. You're like, that's how it seemed, huh?
That's how it seemed.
The reason I was interrupting, I didn't realize I was interrupting, but bad listener, sorry. The thing I was going to mention was, I have heard many stories in town about that guy being so nice to women. And I think maybe he is a nice guy, but I think he likes having women fall in love with him in that moment.
Of course he does. Yeah.
I think whatever that ism is, he's got it.
Yes. And I think many times he, you know, takes that to the next level in the moment. I you know, that's sort of what you hear, but yeah, great quality, I would say. So anyway...
Do I have that quality?
You do. I don't, because I will tell you, at every party I have, some woman leaves with a crush on you. I've told you. Did I tell you this?
You told me there were things that the last event that I attended of yours.
But by the way, you didn't come to my birthday party.
What was what?
I had a fear that I sent it to the wrong email address on a paperless post because you didn't respond at all.
Oh.
Yeah, it was last week.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Oh, this is awkward.
No, it's not, because I was like, that's unlike him to not respond at all. And it was David Get Mortified. Is that not your email address anymore?
Sure, just say it on the air. No, I'm fine.
If you want to reach David Nadelberg.
I'm totally fine. I don't recall that.
It was last week, so you would.
No, I'm saying I don't recall seeing that in my inbox. This is super awkward.
No, okay.
Not really, though.
No, but I've told you, it doesn't feel like a party unless you're there.
Where was it? Was it at your thing?
No, it was at Lucy's El Adobe.
Oh, my God. You know what? I'm going to be totally honest. I did get that.
Okay, good.
Because I remember seeing that and going, oh, cool, Lucy's El Adobe.
And then you forgot.
And I completely blanked, and this is me now. I'm owning that.
Yeah, this is awkward.
No, it's not because I'm owning it.
Yeah.
And then I'm saying I'm really sorry that I do remember receiving that, and I think it was like in a blizzard of stuff, and then I was like, need to respond to that or see if I can go to that, and I didn't.
But yes, and it did go on without you. But so women always have crushes on you. And I feel that you really pretty charming women, and you tend to not, like, you're like, oh, that's so nice. But not, you know.
You're basing this on the last experience we had.
There were several women at one of my barbecues.
One of them was crazy.
Oh, which one? Not the one. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yes. One of them happens to be listening to your podcast on the regular now. So anyway.
I'm sure it's not her. I'm sure she's a delight.
She's a delight. But, okay, I know who you mean by crazy. So, yeah. So anyway.
I'm in a weird romantically emotional something place.
What does that mean?
I'm a dead human being, is what
I'm
saying.
Are you dead inside or dead inside and outside?
Both.
No.
And so alive.
At the same time.
Yeah.
What? So tell me about that.
Okay. Tell me, what is the premise of this podcast, by the way? Because I thought it was about addiction.
It is, but you don't...
I don't have addictions, though. I've been in therapy enough of my life that I have adjacent things. So
That's what we're talking about. But
I feel safer, and this will help with the relationship
yes.
questions. Like, I think this is how I probably am in a relationship or anything. I like to be oriented.
Yes.
Like, where it doesn't mean I have to know everything at all. I just need to know, here's what I'm doing roughly. And it's like, oh, okay, now I'll just relax and, see where it goes, right? But yes. I just need the parameter. So
this is a little unfortunate because there's just no direction. I mean, no. So there, yes, if people are talking about addiction, which is, 90% of the people that come in here and talk about that.
Sure.
Then, there are certain, we sort of go, the trajectory is, chronological and what happened and what is it like now. But when it's somebody who I'm just interested in talking about healthy relationships, we sort of can go anywhere.
You mean romantic relationships?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
I know. I should have told you before. So I'm interested in where you are now. Right. Have I comforted you by giving you a direction?
I wasn't uncomforted before. I have been comforted since moment one. I'm drinking a delicious WeWork tea.
Yes.
From the makers of WeWork coffee.
And you pounded a WeWork watermelon.
Watermelon water, yeah.
Water.
Yeah.
So okay.
I'm known for that.
So, and one of the funniest tweets I have ever read was by you, where you said, really? I'm sitting outside therapy. I hear hysterical laughter inside. Have I been doing this wrong?
That is true. I do remember that moment. It was really, yeah, I think that was towards the end of my last run of therapy.
So you're not in it now?
Not now. I take that back. I think those who are doing work on themselves are always in therapy. I'm just not in a that version of therapy at the moment. Right. So
tell me what version of therapy you're in.
Well, I've been doing a lot of, been meditating a lot, which is something I'm really bad at because I'm a very scatterbrained person. And you're also not supposed to say you're bad at meditation.
You're
not,
if you're bad at it, that means if you think you're doing it wrong, it means you're doing it right, they say.
Oh, sure. Anyway, but I've been doing this. I've been doing a lot of that stuff. And I enjoy the challenge of it a lot.
Yeah.
and I enjoy the fact that every morning I think I need to do this. It's like they told me to do it. Like you're brushing your teeth. It's just part of hygiene and just take 5 minutes. And then I don't, but I like sitting in bed thinking about how I'm supposed to. And then every 4 days I do it. And, so it's baby steps, but I really I find it very liberating and it's very, important for me. But and I've been doing a lot of writing, like personal writing, and also I've been doing a lot of just a lot more like honesty, like a lot more confessional, just even like I don't know, just not giving a shit. And right. So I don't know. Those are some of the things.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of that. That people who are working on themselves are always in therapy. It's just not always the sit down and pay somebody to listen to you kind.
Yeah.
And the meditation, is it a particular form of meditation?
Everyone asks me that. It's not transcendental. I don't know more than, I don't know the name of it. Let's just call it Bob. I'm doing Bob meditation.
Did someone teach it to you?
Yeah. I'm in a guided class.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. And you go every week?
Yeah. Yeah. And I, it's been, but then, and then I do it beyond that too.
Yeah.
Once
every 4 days.
Yeah. Roughly. Sometimes like every day, but then in the past like week or so, it's been a little more sporadic.
Yeah.
And actually yoga has been, something I've been doing for the past few, on and off for like 15 years, but about a year, maybe a year and a half ago, I really started doing it a lot. And for a while, and I just came back from a mini hiatus with it, but, I was going through a really hard time and I found it to be great because I always love, there's a moment in yoga class, it's sort of like at the tail end, like somewhere I'm like 75% or 80% in, and I get this moment of like not staring at the hot girl who's next to me doing the provocative poses whatever. That I'm not supposed to be pretending like are super awesome. And or I'm not supposed to be looking at the mirror going, ugh, I'm fucking fat and disgusting. Like, I'm just like, I got a gut and I'm disgusting. Or I'm not supposed to be thinking about like some work that I'm supposed to do. Like, whatever distractions totally like flood my brain during yoga class, and there are many. I love the moment where they're gone, and I'm just here and I'm in this moment. And I had a very spiritual, I had a really important thing happen to me about about a year and a half ago in yoga, and I got a mantra from it. Like, this phrase just sort of came to me, and it was kind of one of the most important moments of my life. And
it just came to your head.
Yeah. And it carried me through that moment and many others. And I really like... Anyway, so I've been doing that. And
Do you talk about what that is, or is it too personal?
The phrase is, I love Anna David. I love Anna David.
That is many people's talk mantra, which is weird.
It's weird.
I require Colin it of Farrell. All listeners. Yeah, do you do yoga with Colin Farrell is the most important question I will ask.
That actually is the mantra, is do you do yoga with Colin Farrell? It's a question.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm not into statements as a mantra. No, the mantra was... so the situation was that my dad was dying. Yeah. So super fun topic. And in that moment, I remember I felt a lot of pain, in the class, cause it was like, they were kicking my ass. And this phrase, and I just thought about how my dad couldn't go to yoga class. Mm-hmm. And how that, at first that was sad for me. And then but then it sort of made me feel really grateful, where I was like, what's the phrase? Like, I get to, and so the phrase was, I get to breathe. I get to feel this. That's what I think what the first was. And it was one of being like, five or six or seven, it was like Mad Libbed, where it was like that same phrase, but like the verb of it just kept changing. So it was like, I get to feel this, I get to breathe this, I get to move through this, I get to be in this, I get to, and so some of them were negative connotations, some of them were positive connotations, and they just looped like a record player. And every time I would get back to the beginning and say, I get to be this, or I get to feel that, and like I would come back to this, to moment one, I would feel stronger and I would feel better and I would feel privileged that I am in a situation where I get to use all my limbs and I get to breathe and walk around, and it's not the worst thing in the world. Whereas when you're decaying, or eventually dead, you can't do any of that. But like, you know, if you're bedridden, and so it just really made me super
grateful.
Grateful. Yeah. It was I actually just ran into that yoga teacher at, Trader Joe's a few weeks ago. And I told her, I said, look, you don't know this, but when I started taking your class, this is why I started taking it. Like, I needed to do something. And that's what I decided to do for reasons X, Y, and Z. And in the middle of one of the first few classes, like, this thing hit me. And so you gave me a forum for that, and I just want to thank you.
Yeah.
And she was like, what? Awesome.
Yeah.
And I guess she now tells that story in yoga class.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it truly... And
now she wants to perform in Mortified, which is the funnier thing.
Which is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much of contentment do you believe goes back to gratitude?
What do you mean?
I mean that, you know, our perceptions, I mean, I think this is particularly true for addicts and alcoholics, but I think it's also true for all humans. Our perceptions of our lives, are inaccurate.
a lot of the time.
Yeah.
It's self-pity, I didn't get this, it's compare and despair, whatever it is. And if you can go back to, look at what I've got, I'm so grateful for it, then your perception changes, as it did for you in this yoga class, in these classes.
Yes. That is my bad answer as a guest. One word. Yes.
What if you only gave one word answers?
Having been on the other side of interviews.
Do people do that?
Yes. And I will name names.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Not on the TV show.
No, yes. Fuck that Anthony Michael Hall.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't see that episode. I was refamiliarizing myself with the show this morning as I was doing all that prep that I do for this. But which goes back to, you showed up at True Tales of Lust and Love, however many years ago, to see Sasha.
We're looping back. Oh, yeah. See my friend Sasha Rothschild. Yeah.
And I was totally like starstruck. I've told you this. And so nervous because I had been watching the show. Which was on IFC, right?
This is why we were canceled, because everyone in my life thinks it was on IFC and we were on Sundance Channel. Yeah. We're now called Sundance TV. But I love that you watch it, because very few people watch the show.
I loved it. I watched season two. You know, I saw the Marc Maron, who's currently interviewing Obama. Did you know that?
That makes total sense. And that's amazing.
Yeah.
Meaning, because I know he's in town. I know Obama's in town right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they were, this morning on the radio, they were saying, you know, watch out for traffic because he's going to be in Highland Park being interviewed by Marc Maron.
Good for fucking Marc Maron. That's amazing.
I know.
I interviewed him for season two of our show.
That's what I was saying. Yeah.
That was awful.
Why? He came on the podcast. Previous podcast.
And your podcast? Good. Yeah. He was not awful. He was a very nice and lovely man. That experience for me was, there was just lots of cooks in that particular kitchen behind the scenes prepping for that interview and during that interview. And there was a lot, we were sitting in these super uncomfortable chairs and it just, everything about it was sort of, and I was, yeah, there's a big backstory to that. But, and I did not, and he was like the first shoot of our season two. And I was like, can we not have it be a guy who's like this, I was like, I just don't think Marc Maron's a guy who'd take a shine to me too much. Like, can we just.
He doesn't take a shine to anybody.
I know. That's fine.
Kind of amazing.
Yeah. And I knew that. And I knew he's who he is. And, but I was like, there was going to be lots of network execs breathing and down my neck and like present at that particular shoot. So I was like, can we have it not be a person who interviews people wonderfully for a living?
Right.
Like, can I not be...
Were you intimidated?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're interviewing a fantastic interviewer and, you know, and I just had... like so many people shouting directions throughout, and it was for that particular shoot, and it was and we were in this like weird setup, like
in his house, imagine.
No, it was outside on his patio. We're in this like very awkward anyway, and like I was like very instructed, I want you to face exactly this way, and it's like just very often, like, that show could get a little overproduced.
Yeah.
A little handcuffy.
Yeah.
And I think it shows when that happens.
It didn't to me. It's a wonderful show. I am so surprised. I hate television, so it's a big deal that I watched it.
I love you. And it's true. I love you to say that. Thank you.
No, it's so true. And
it was called The Mortified Session. You can watch it on Netflix in America, and you can see all of it on iTunes. I think it's only season one of Mortified Sessions is on Netflix.
And is the movie...
And by the way, season two, I should say, is I'm more proud of it.
Yeah, I mean, I never saw season one. But so as far as I'm concerned, it never happened. Kidding. That's narcissism. But it's a joke. But so let's walk people, in case people are not familiar with the Mortified trajectory.
Sure.
You found a love letter that you had written when you were how old?
I was 15. I wrote a love letter to a girl, never gave it to her. And then in my 20s, I'm not a performer, but I decided to put that on stage. And invite a bunch of friends to do the same with their diaries, love letters, lyrics, etc. And that turned into what was supposed to just be one night turned into the past 13 and a half years of my life.
Wow.
Like, we're over a bar mitzvah in terms of how old Mortified is. We're heading to our quinceañera.
Yeah, and then you're going to be at drinking age?
Yes.
Car rental age?
Car rental age. Presidential candidate age.
Right, right.
But yeah, so Mortified sort of took over my life and became this thing. And then from that, we did books, Mortified books, and then we did...
the documentary.
We did a documentary. Well, we did a TV show called The Mortified Sessions that was originally not even supposed to be with Mortified in the title. And then right before it aired, they renamed it with the word Mortified somewhere in the title. Mm-hmm. But then we did this documentary that's also on Netflix called Mortified Nation. Mm-hmm. And that was totally independent. And that was really fun. We might be making more like it, which would be exciting. So we'll see. And we're right now, our big focus is doing this podcast.
Yeah.
Weekly podcast, cleverly titled The Mortified Podcast.
I think it's smart to say it, stay on brand.
Yeah.
So, and in that, you have the people who told stories at Mortified come on and you interview them. Is that how it goes?
For the podcast?
Yeah.
The podcast is one story a week. So it's one excerpt from our stage show, usually about 8 minutes, something like that. And so somebody, or 9 minutes or whatever, and so somebody performs and you hear like somebody on stage reading aloud their diary. And then there's a second segment, and the second segment is we get to talk to them about things that they didn't share on stage. Sometimes it really comes full circle. There's an upcoming episode with a guy named Damien I think the interview and I didn't do the interview, but the interview... that my co-producer Neil did with Damien and Damien's diaries. I don't know. I think they work together in a really nice, touching way.
So because you talk to so many people about ultimately, sure, it's about growing up and how they've changed,
yeah.
But I imagine their relationships are a huge part of it.
Yeah, well, sex is a huge part of Mortified. Am I talking too close to this mic?
No, you know, I'm...
Because you're down here.
I used to be concerned, and when I listen to them, even if somebody's got the mic close, my editor... No, I know I said we don't edit.
Well, you have somebody who does a thing, sure.
Makes it sound perfect.
Right, okay.
Right, guys?
Right.
So...
Sorry, go on. This part should be edited out.
No, none of it. None of it. So...
Right now. Here. This part.
Yeah, no, this part. So let's just keep doing that. Yeah. So you talk to people about sex and relationships.
Not exclusively, but it does come. It's a big thing of what kids write.
Yeah.
When they were 14 is having sex, wanting sex, usually more wanting sex.
Yes.
And so I'm very familiar with teenage hormones.
Right.
Yeah.
Which are the most exciting hormones of all.
Yeah, and I know you were involved with Loveline years ago, and like. So, yeah, I always feel I've always wanted to meet Dr. Drew.
If you had come to my birthday party, guess who was there?
The Double D?
Yeah.
Fuck me.
For like a couple hours. I did it with Emily Morse, who has a podcast called Sex with Emily, who does Loveline every Thursday. So they're really good friends.
See, if I
know. If only you didn't ignore emails from me.
I didn't really. I feel bad. I feel I don't know.
Don't. So yes, so teenage hormones. What were you?
Oh, my Double D.
My Moby was there too. Previous podcast guest. Sorry,
are you just name dropping?
Colin Farrell was there. He wasn't.
He wasn't. But his yoga mat was.
So wait a second. What was I just gonna say about teenage hormones? God damn it! It left me.
I'm sorry. No. Were you looping back to me?
Of course I was. My favorite Mortified story of all time was the one where the girl, she's talking about her dreams for the future, and they literally involve like sex. All there's just dreams of sex and drugs, and it's amazing. Do you know which story I mean?
There's lots of them like that. If you meant there's one in our movie that is that.
I think what? That is. Was her name Stacy?
That's right.
Yes,
Stacy Kasdan.
Yeah,
and she's in Boston, and she makes a wish list of like she hadn't been even kissed.
Yeah,
and the sort of the piece ends with her finally getting kissed, but it's like, these are her wish lists for stuff. And most of them are about sex. And it's like sex on a waterbed, sex on a trampoline. I want to do the spaghetti thing from Lady and the Tramp. And it's just like, and it's like, some of them are very graphic where she's like, be a prostitute for an evening.
Yes, yes.
And then the next one is like the Lady and the Tramp thing where it's like, and I love, one of the things I love, and this is what goes back to the whole human thing. Like, I love that whole experience where it's like, I think typically in pop culture, when we're given a window into some world, it's a very narrow window where we see, you know, people are always funny or people are always sexy or whatever. And it's like, you know, what I love about Stacey's Diary in that is that it's like the innocence and the sort of whatever her inner slutty desire, like both of those are swirled together.
Yeah.
And that's really how we are.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. How is your inner sluttiness coupled with your sweetness and humanness?
How do I really answer that?
I don't see you. I don't perceive you as slutty at all.
I've gone through slutty phases.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a subjective term.
It is, certainly. But, and a pejorative term that's unnecessary.
But for my... I'll slut shame myself.
Okay, yeah. It's much more acceptable for men.
No, I've... yeah, I've gone through phases where, you know, that neediness is there and you just need the affection of somebody, whether it's physical or just, like, even the attention from somebody. And that...
Do you think that's what sort of sex... lots of sex with different people provides?
That's one of the things. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things. Mm-hmm. Another is like a reassertment. Is that a word? No.
It is now.
Or sort of like a reclaiming mm-hmm. of, like, let's say, you know, I had... it was in sort of a relationship where I felt my damaged... Mm-hmm. Depleted in a certain way, and I felt like so there was like a moment where like I had like with a vengeance I had to sort of like reclaim mm-hmm. that which I felt had been like lost,
mm-hmm.
whether that was taken from me or whether I just lost it because I'm human
happens.
and yeah, but and so I think, you know, I mean, all sex is psychological, so. It's always fulfilling some psychological need other than the biological let's make babies part.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the pleasure part?
That's psychological.
Tell me.
And it's also physiological, but...
Yeah. How do you... tell me why.
But you can get off by yourself, so like...
Yes, but it's... I mean, it doesn't mean because you want to do it with somebody else that's psychological.
Why not?
I don't know.
I'm not... That's not a bad thing.
No. It could be part of the aforementioned therapy that does not take place in an office with somebody who you're paying.
You know what I discovered in my self-described slutty phase was I forgot how much I liked like kissing, like first kisses and making out.
Yes.
Like that was so fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think that obviously, but like it was ignoring the sex part.
Yeah.
Like, just like, it was, so.
That's interesting because the one time you and I have had dinner alone at the 101 Cafe after my car was towed, I remember you telling me that. You told me how much you enjoyed making out.
That sounds like a creepy move to like.
Hey, Anna. No, it was in context. It made tons of sense.
Yeah.
But it stuck with me.
I think that might have been in that moment where I was like really sort of
in your
dwelling on.
Face.
Yeah, I might have been like dwelling on that.
Yeah. So, okay. And in terms of relationships, I do remember when I met you at Hebe. I don't want to get into anything like painful or whatever, that you were with a very pretty girlfriend. And I went to, like, oh my God, they're so perfect. Look at them. That's how I.
Yeah. I might've thought that too at the time.
But that was a long relationship, right?
It was a long relationship.
And,
destroyed my heart.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
You know, this is somebody who I thought that particular relationship, but that was somebody who I thought I was going to, you know, spend my life with.
Yeah.
And we were on different pages as it turned out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that we were on different pages, but we were definitely on different pages.
Was that your most serious relationship?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I've had a few other like long-term relationships, but mm-hmm. I never really dated in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And then in my late 20s to late 30s, I was in several back-to-back relationships. Mm-hmm. And so I'd only done a little bit of dating. So then when I got out of my last relationship, I was like, you know what? I need to sort of discover who I am, whether that's sexually, whether that's in just in terms of like in personal dynamics, whether that's like everything. So I was like, I need to be like alone for a while, mm-hmm. because I think my default mode is relationships. I like stability. I like comfort. Like that's like super attractive to me. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of decided to put myself out of my comfort zone for a while. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Is that where we are now?
Now we are, I don't know where we are. I really mm-hmm. don't. I mean, I sort of just started seeing somebody recently, but mm-hmm. like that had been like a hiatus, and I don't even know how I feel personally for myself about like where I would want that to go. Nothing to do with her.
Well, isn't she not in the country?
Oh, that was no.
That was last week. That was literally last week you told me that. No. It was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. The timeline, yeah. So, let's change the topic.
That's so fascinating.
There was somebody a few months ago who I might have been telling you about last week that I was trying to figure something out with.
Yeah.
That was out of the country, yes.
Okay.
But I was not referring to that.
Okay. What makes for a healthy relationship in your mind?
Should I give you the boring answers? Honesty, communication.
No. 'Cause
they're true.
Yeah.
But they are boring.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I don't know. Well, I think my last relationship was healthy for a while. Mm-hmm. As healthy as, you know, 'cause everybody's allegedly healthy relationship is also super unhealthy in lots of ways. I don't know, you know, I can't say because I have no idea of answering that. I don't know what the barometer is. What's success?
Yeah, well, I have a friend, previous podcast guest, Carrie White, who says all relationships are successful. Some are just shorter than others.
I like Carrie White.
Yeah. She's full of great things like that.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? So when I did I became single around the time that season 2 of our TV show was happening. Mm-hmm. And, or what was it, season 1? Whatever it was. And I remember being terrified of like being like, oh, I gotta like talk to like women, like I gotta meet people and like do that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm a very social person, but like I was also like but at the same time, I also like had this sudden job where I'm like having to talk to strangers mm-hmm. and pull information out of them. Mm-hmm. Strangers who are used to being guarded because they have publicists and all mm-hmm. that. And I used both as sort of rehearsal for each other. And so I would actually go out to bars and I would force myself to talk to people, specifically women, but it could be just anybody, mm-hmm. As sort of training, improvisational training for conversations that would happen on the TV show. And in the TV show, I kind of used that to sort of like make myself feel less terrified mm-hmm. of, you know, having to make a conversation with someone at a bar.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And now I'm very, I feel, I am actually comfortable. Like I, more or less, I'll be out with friends and if we want to go talk to somebody, like I enjoy talking to strangers. Like that's the book that I've been writing is all about my relationship, my friendship with this stranger that I, you know, for years. And like my whole life is all about conversations with strangers. That's my career.
Right. That's interesting.
Or making strangers connect. Like mortified on many levels is that.
So it's interesting to me that that you were at all terrified of speaking to women you didn't know, given that I see you very comfortable socially, but also because your entire career has been built on that in a way.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, but you get, you know, you get out there again and you realize, like, I don't know, like, whatever insecurities you might have, maybe it's about your age, maybe it's about your weight, maybe it's about, like, your success, whatever they are, or your personality. Maybe I'm annoying, like, all those things. Mm-hmm. Like, I know I'm annoying, by the way.
You're the least annoying person ever.
I'm mildly annoying. But, but no, but, like, you, like, whatever those insecurities are, you go out there in the world and they get magnified mm-hmm. by the small reject. Like, I remember the first date. Oh my God. I went out with somebody who was like, and I, for years I have always defended Los Angeles as being like, it is not, I've never had a woman say like, what car do you drive? Ugh.
Right.
That is. And I always like whatever stupid stereotype gets established by like movies that say that that's what happens. That is not my Los Angeles.
Right.
And anyway, I went on a date with somebody and that was absolutely what happened. Like, she was like very like, ugh, you drive a grandpa car. And it was like, she was such a piece of shit. Like, I bought her dinner. Like, I did like everything wrong. And like, she didn't thank me. And it was just like, and I was nervous. And yeah. And so because of those little rejections, those, I'm saying, that happened early on in whatever formative moment of singledom or whatever, like you.
Yeah, you take those. And
then it just becomes like, oh my God, I can't do this. What the, like, you know.
That is interesting. What?
And who the fuck is she?
Exactly.
Like, so like, exactly. And then you get your bearings and you're like, she's stupid.
Yeah, it's interesting. My insecurity that I bring is that I don't know how to have relationships based on, you know, I tend to be primarily single. And when you talk about how you're comfortable in a relationship, I'm like, oh, I wish I was more like that.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. You wish you were more like what?
Comfortable in a relationship.
You wish you wish you were more like, meaning monogamous or meaning just like
that's what my history has been. I wish that I envy, and I'm not saying you're at all like this, but you know, I feel like people can be screwed up in that they are never in relationships or that they're always in relationships, that they're sort of serial monogamous.
I have now lived two lives.
Right.
Like I was, and literally in my 20s, like I think I went out on like a few dates and, you know, and I didn't know what was up. I didn't know how to do anything.
But yeah, we learn with experience.
Yeah, and then I got thrown to the wolves and I was panicked. And I also because I knew my dad, like there was this weird, a lot of it tied into, my mom had already passed away, and so my dad was all that I had left. And I realized actually towards the end of my last relationship, I was like, oh, I do have a biological clock. My biological clock is that I do want to have kids.
Yeah.
And one day, and I want my dad to know that kid. And I don't mean like meet a baby, because that's bullshit. I want that kid to be of conscious age to have a relationship with this, to my dad, and vice versa. I want my dad, so like I want them both to shape each other.
Right.
But that means my dad's got to be young enough to be able to hold a kid and carry a kid and play with a kid and do all that. He has to be old enough to remember stuff and have an active personality. And then you start doing the math and you're like, well, that means the kid has to at least be 5. And if I want my dad to be a certain age for that to happen, like the math works out where you're like, I got to meet a girl like tomorrow.
Right.
And so I got to like get out of my system whatever I need to do before tomorrow.
Right.
And so it made this, I had this like total panic. And then when my dad passed away, I lost my biological clock.
That's so,
and I felt very, and I still feel like lost. Like, what's my pressure now? And what's my, like,
But isn't that a much better time to be?
Yes.
In a relationship? 'Cause
now I'm in control.
Well, because you're not going to pick somebody that is inappropriate just because you have fear about the clock.
Well, I would never, ever do that. However, like I would never pick somebody because like, oh, I need to fulfill some sort of bullshit, mm-hmm. like fantasy that
I have.
It could
be subconscious though.
It could be subconscious. And yeah, so I don't know. I but then I lost that biological clock. So it really loomed on me, and it was like really it was this pressure.
Yeah.
It's less about like it's more about the pressure being gone.
Yeah.
Now, because I think it was making me, I'm sort of someone who overanalyzes it anyway. And it was just making me like more picky, more over, like, and just like impossible.
Well, yeah. I mean, how much of that is just sort of surrender of, you know, getting that the universe controls what happens, not us. And so there is truly no point in holding on to something that we cannot control.
Right, which goes back to why I love yoga and meditation. Yeah. And I mean it. Like, I really think it's a fuck you to our life that we have created for us in this culture, because the moment of surrender, the idea that you can just be now is something that's so foreign to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it.
I love when you can do it?
Yes. I'm terrible at it, but I love it. I love the challenge of it, and I love the minutes when I can get there, and I can get that, like I said, like in that moment where I'm sweating and I'm in so much pain, and all of a sudden this mantra hits me, and I'm like, I get to do this. It's not like I am doing this. I get to.
Right.
Like, it's a privilege. It feels liberating, and I really, so getting that surrender to the moment is... I mean, it's the greatest gift.
I find it so hard that I do a lot of, you know, sort of subconscious, semi-conscious, like beating myself up for like, oh my God, you're not in the moment. Why are you not in the moment? You know, even when I'm interviewing people for this, and even when it's someone as fascinating as you, I in my head, I'm like, ooh, this is a good interview. Oh yeah.
Why am I fascinated? Like, can I say something? Like, I was just having an insecurity moment where I'm like, we're talking about fucking relationships, and I was like, she's normally talking to people about like cocaine addiction and like drug and like booze, and so I'm like having this insecurity of like, this is the boring episode, and like, because I'm like, do I need to like share horrible things?
No, I mean, so, but the thing is, the emails I get are a lot. I really appreciate it when you're talking about relationships, because that has more of a widespread appeal to people.
Okay.
Because it's relevant for everybody, not just for, you know, addicts and alcoholics. And even the website, the accompanying website, afterpartymagazine.com, we're changing it up to make it more about relationships and healthier relationships, because that's more interesting to most people.
There was a moment, though, where I was feeling, I wouldn't say addicted to sex, but I would say addicted to affection. Like, there was that slutty phase we were talking about. Like, it was a compulsion.
Right.
You know, and I have a very obsessive personality. That's the only reason Mortified exists, is because, you know.
Yeah, it takes that.
Yeah. Not just my obsession, but also, like, Neil's and everybody else involved. But, like, like that is both my strength and weakness. And why did I bring that up?
Because this potential addiction, not to sex, but to affection.
Yeah. And I was like, it was this compulsion. Like, I there was a time like I couldn't go home like alone. Like, I was like, and I'm not saying like I had to go and bring somebody home, because I'm not like that guy.
Right.
But it's more like I had to go out and be interacting with a human. Preferably a female human that I'm attracted to.
Yeah.
Like they're robot. Like I'm a robot. But like, no, but like I there were times, like even in my 20s, and it sort of resurfaced, like, you know, at times in my life where like there's this addiction, there's this compulsion to feel the presence of other people. And so like there were moments where like I would walk to Ralph's at 1:30 in the morning, just to have a small conversation with whoever the dude was at the counter.
Wow, that's
interesting. Or whoever was trying to buy ice cream and wanted to ask me, like, have I ever tried this before?
See, I would think that was so depressing.
Yes, it is.
But so, isn't it less depressing? Isn't it more depressing than just going to sleep at 1:30 in the morning?
Not when you have this addiction. Not when you have this need. Not when you have this... aching, starving thing of like hole in my heart that must be filled by other human beings, like acknowledging I exist because I don't feel like I do in this moment.
Right.
How's that for your sunshine in the morning?
No, I mean, I think it's really interesting. We do talk on this podcast about the sort of, you know, whatever, God,
dark holes.
No, that it's, what is it? A God-filled hole, you know, that it's something that can only be filled with spirituality and not with whatever it is, drugs, alcohol, sex, interaction. God-sized hole. Thank you, brain.
Okay.
It doesn't mean you have to believe in God. That's just how people in recovery often will phrase it. Yeah. So how do you think that, do you think that hole is still there?
Yeah. Well, no, not nearly as much. But I go through waves. You know, I have a fairly intense history of depression throughout my, you know, life from teenage years till now. And that will always be a part of my life. There will never be a drug or a therapy that will remove that. There will just be things that sort of manage that and keep that kind of in check. And, and so it will just come and go in waves. And then the hope is that you manage those waves. And that, you know, I don't feel like life is about the problems that we face in life, whatever they are. Like, it's not about, can we bullet? One of the mistakes I often make is like trying to bulletproof situations.
Mm-hmm.
It's stupid.
Right.
You ultimately cannot bulletproof your life. What you need is, do you know the book by Dr. Seuss, I Had Trouble Getting to Solace Aloo?
No.
It's my favorite Dr. Seuss book. And it's I don't know why it's not more famous, but it's all about a guy who has all these... A creature who has all these problems. He runs away from the problems. And then by the end of the book, he realizes, oh, I can face the problems every day. And the problems in his world are like monsters and creatures coming at him. But all he does is he carries around a big stick. Like, he fixes his problem by arming himself with tools. And like, that lesson has like carried with me my whole life. Like, and it's all about this guy who's trying to get to this magical place, Solace Aloo. This, you know, utopia.
Right.
And the whole book is about like, you're a fucking idiot. There's no utopia. There's no, you're already in it.
Right.
You're already here. You're in your best place. And equip yourself.
So metaphorically meaning sort of going into a relationship being like, I'm not going to get hurt. Or I'm going to hurt them before they hurt me.
Carry a big stick.
Yeah.
No, but that doesn't mean put your guard up. I mean, a little bit, but it means whatever the equipment is for you to have a healthy relationship and
So in terms of the depression, and I share that with you.
Hooray.
Cheery.
Yeah.
What have
fun
you ever,
Friday morning topic. This is being recorded on a Friday morning.
Yes. Sorry. Maybe they're listening on a Friday morning.
Hey, yeah.
Friday morning. What have you tried? Have you done medication?
Well, I've done all of it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I hate medication.
You do?
I think psychiatry is has a lot of evil in it.
I'm a Scientologist.
I'm not like a Scientologist, but I'm close. I side with them on some uncomfortable issues, and that's one of them. There are really important illnesses like bipolar and schizophrenia that require psychiatric help.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are some forms of depression and stuff that can also benefit greatly from psychiatric medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a lot of damage being done, and damage that had been done to me by taking medicine or too much medicine or the wrong kind of medicine. And really, my issue with that industry is there's a cavalier attitude to where you walk into an office and you might tell them two sentences, and they go, oh, this is what you have.
Right.
That's not holistic. No. I would respect them if it was back to the days of Sigmund Freud, and you're doing an hour-long session for several weeks, and then they assess, this is what you need. But you can walk into a place, the average length of a psychiatric...
is 30 minutes.
Not even. It's 25 or something like that. I went to the last psychiatrist that I saw. She sat there. Well, second to last, I should say. She sat there with some iPad app and as I was speaking, was hitting all these buttons on the app. And I'm like, are you listening to me? And she said, yeah, I'm totally listening. And basically what I figured out with the app was, is everything that I was saying was just a matter of, what drug do I give this guy?
Shut up.
Because that industry is, I'm telling you, is completely corrupted by the pharmaceutical industry. That's my big political thing. But like, but I also think that industry also does a lot of good, for, like I said, for those who really need it. But like this woman, from the minute I came in the door, it was about, what drug do I give him?
Yeah.
That's the only way I know how to help him.
Yeah.
It was never holistic.
Yes.
And that is not a rare circumstance.
No, I have been to, I would say, many psychiatrists who are like that.
I think that industry was good, and I think it is. I'm like you can hear it in my voice. Like I'm angry about that world because I think they have done a huge disservice to mental health, and mental health is a big issue with me. And like I am a big fan. Sometimes people don't get there's a difference, but like I'm a big fan of psychology.
Yes.
And I'm a big fan of psychotherapy.
Right.
But psychiatry, I think is in dangerous need of repair.
Yes, I mean the pharmaceutical industry is in dangerous need of repair.
Yeah.
But I will say my current psychiatrist.
That person.
I went there. Our session was an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Which I had never experienced before.
Holistic.
And there were several sessions while we figured it out.
Great.
And she said, I think you have been misdiagnosed. And the test with a lot of these medications is, do you feel better? Do you feel okay? Do you have side effects? Are you, you know, do you feel numbed?
And that's great. And I love that she's not doing the 20-minute nonsense. Like, maybe eventually they can, but it's like I just get offended by the idea when they eventually just become drug pushers,
which is what
the majority of my experiences and others that I know is with psychiatrists. And that's why I find it I've had very bad side effects from, and these are dangerous drugs you're putting into your body. They're very potent.
Yeah.
And so if you're messing with your mind in that way, you better make sure that you're doing it in an appropriate, reasonable, well-researched manner, as opposed to just somebody taking an iPad app and deciding like, yeah. So I'm glad that you had that experience. And I wish there were more of those experiences, because I don't, unlike Scientologists, I don't think psychiatry is fundamentally evil or bad. I think it has been corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
Mental health is a huge part of what I do with Mortified. It's a huge part of my life, and it's a really important, and it's a huge part of the book that I'm writing. Like it's everything to me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, every time I look at the news and there's something on there, like that's all I think about is sort of the mental health aspects of what, you know.
Right. Yeah. I relate to that. You mean the news when it's like the pilot who's had the history of depression and crashes the plane?
Yeah. And people jump to all sorts of, conclusions, or they start forming judgments of those who suffer from mental health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clearly with the work that I do is all, oops, sorry, I'm bumping the mic. Mm-hmm. Clearly the work that I do is all about the removal of shame.
Yeah.
Like shame is the big enemy in what I'm doing, other than making people laugh with Mortified. And we all have shame. I have a very, very intense relationship with shame. I think shame is healthy on some level, but for the most part, I just want to obliterate the fuck out of it.
Yeah.
Because I think it has destroyed us. And I think in a lot of ways, mental health issues have been so crippled by shame.
Yeah.
Because so many people are afraid to talk, feel comfortable about, like, I don't know, whatever kind of issues they're having for years. So I have tics. I have like,
what?
Right. So the face you just made is not uncommon for me.
Yeah.
Like I have, they're very similar to Tourette's, right?
What?
Yeah. Okay. So that's a whole other topic, okay, I know. Yeah. And it's like a very huge, like giant part of my life. And I had a great deal of shame about those. And I feel that is, and at some point I realized that that was poison for me.
Yeah.
That is disgusting, and that I need to, so I started actually only a few years ago, finally not just writing about it, but like talking to my friends about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started talking to strangers about it. At the risk of, and like, actually this is probably the first time I'm saying this
publicly.
Yeah. I mean, not that anybody cares usually, like what, I'm not usually getting asked like super personally. Like I'm usually getting asked like, "How did Mortified start?"
Right.
But yeah, and that, yeah. So shame is a big. Sorry, this is my monologue. I'm done.
No, it's super interesting, and it does. It is the whole purpose of what After Party is about, which is destigmatizing addiction and mental health issues.
Yeah.
And it's. I you just said, you know, I think shame is sometimes necessary or somewhat. I think it's never necessary, you know. I don't think it does. Well, I mean, like if you do something super egregious, I guess, you know.
There's a side, yeah. There's a side of me, as someone who's involved in the storytelling movement or whatever you want to call it, there's a side of me that also knows that this... The reason I say some shame is healthy is because there's this side of the blogging world and the Twitter world and the world of people who are performing at Mortified or The Moth or Love and Lust or any of these things. There's an exhibitionism and a narcissism that can come with that that is gross.
Yes.
And therefore, like, there should be some kind of shame to sort of filter it so that it's... Just because you're experiencing it doesn't mean you need to tell it to everybody.
Yeah.
That's great for you and your therapy, but it's not necessarily great for the audience.
Yes.
Or those who have to hear it if you're telling people in person. So I don't think it's healthy if we live in a world where everybody at every minute is being like, I got herpes or whatever the fuck they're saying.
Chronic confessionalists.
Right. Yes. Because I think there's a neediness from that, and that's just as unhealthy.
Yes, and I think a desire to have false intimacy.
Right, and there's the crutch that some people have of like, if I tell you some sort of intense thing about me, you'll respect me your tiny violins will start playing for me, and you'll start thinking of me in some sort of like, you'll cheer for me more.
Right.
If I tell you my dad, like, killed himself or like abused me or like whatever, that this was not true, by the way.
Yes,
like,
yes, I understand.
But like if you tell somebody some sob story, like there is this sickness where like this almost competitive like thing where like people feel this need to sort of almost rival each other in sort of these sob stories. And I think, I don't know, it has to be tempered with something. One of those things is shame.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, don't be shameless is, a good word to describe it. I agree. And it's also a huge part of recovery rooms.
Yeah.
Is people will just, there are people who have issues with the sorts of things that are shared. And a lot of times it's a little bit of a one-upmanship.
What do you mean by they have issues?
So there are people who will... It almost becomes competitive about, this is not my experience necessarily, but I've heard people say this, where there's a competition element to like, my story is worse than yours.
Yeah. Or, you know, I've only been in group therapy situations a few times, but like, or you hear somebody else talking and you're like, oh fuck, I'm not as molested as they are.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like I'm not as alcohol, like whatever their thing is, and you're like, oh, that's fucking bad. You win.
Yeah.
And so sometimes the competitive element plays the other way. I totally get that.
Well, and I think people, I remember when I was, you know, in rehab and talking to people, I was like, yeah, I don't really think I'm an addict. And people looked around and went, oh my God, you are. I've heard what you've been saying. And I felt this great rush of almost pride and, well, and comfort because I was like, oh, okay, I'm in the right place.
Because they were calling you on your shit, or do you stand by what you were saying?
No, my perception of it was screwed up. I thought I was possibly in the wrong place because I didn't think it was, quote, bad enough. And then to get reassurance, like, oh, no, it's bad enough.
That's, you know, that whole, like, that's like a whole, like, one of the things I've been actually even writing in my book is this notion of, like, you know, we feel guilt and shame about like whatever our situation is. It wasn't like other people have had it worse, so therefore I shouldn't feel bothered by whether I'm feeling.
Yeah.
You know, and that is fucked.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, yes, we all do need perspective, but you know, just because some other person like had this terrible life and they were like in a war-torn country and all these things, like, yes. They had it worse, but it doesn't matter. Like, even if you were cut from the T-ball team and that had this huge psychic scar on you, and I can say that because as a producer of Mortified, like, I hear the psychic scars of people all the time, and they're usually something far more trivial than being molested.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they were molested, even if their parents were alcoholic or they were alcoholic, like, it's the small shit in life that often, like, owns us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah. So.
Yeah, and there is. Yeah, there is. I'm not deserving of being mortified or damaged or by this.
Yeah, or like you shouldn't feel sympathy for me because I'm not. Yeah, and I find. Yeah, so that whole competitive element of whether it's like playing on your insecurities and then making you feel bad, like oh, I'm not worthy of the sorrow and the I don't know, the love that these people are getting, or whether it's the competitive thing like, oh, I better goose up my story to kind of, you know, when I tell people that my mom was an alcoholic or something, I better like say she also was born with like no money and, you know, like I really got to dial it up. Like, and so people like goose up their stories.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that was not my story.
Yes. No, I understand. I understand. Yeah. Okay. We so have to wrap up because this has been so good. So I hope you have not had moments of insecurity and or shame. But I will say one final thing. Yeah. People, a friend of mine who's in recovery said, you know, people will often share, you know, I constantly woke up with people I didn't know. And that sort of is almost a trope in recovery. And he's like, I don't know. I never woke up with people I don't know. Like that almost becomes like something you just say as an example of alcoholism.
It's
kind of funny. Not funny, ha ha, but interesting.
Not sort of knee slappy, but no. More like, more just like two fingers on the chin stroking, kind of like, humorous.
Will people, those people, to bring it full circle,
guffaw,
that you heard laughing in therapy while you were wondering if you were maybe doing it wrong, that's what they could have been laughing about. I'm just saying, okay, we're good, we're done. Anything to add? Yeah.
I love you.
Yeah,
you're smart enough. You're good enough. I don't know.
Are you talking to me or them?
I was talking to the audience.
Yeah. Okay. You don't love me.
I do love you. You're fantastic.
You too. That's so cute. Look at that's a good moment. Wow. So that was Dave Nadelberg. I have to say, when I started this podcast, this was exactly the kind of episode that I had sort of hoped could happen in just terms of revelations, in terms of just me talking to somebody that I know and just hearing stuff that just hearing vulnerability and hearing stuff that I hadn't expected. So wow, go check out more Dave Nadelberg and please check out Mortified if you have not already. And I will talk to you next time.